Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2018, Episode 4. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, your official source for just having fun talking about the Huskers. And of course, it's presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice. Good to have along again by my side. We've been sidekicks since, boy, about 2003, maybe?
Yeah, right around there, I would say.
Isn't it crazy?
We've been doing this kind of stuff for a while.
It's Dr. Rob Zadisk, a former Husker, great, now a doctor and has a God complex because he's an anesthesiologist and puts people to sleep for a living. God, you got a great life. You do have a great life, you know that?
It's solid.
I work my ass off. You just come in strolling, loving life.
Man, you make it look good.
I don't make it look good. I'm heavier than I've ever been. I'm more stressed than I've ever been. I'm shortness of breath, sweats, side pains. I swear I'm going to have a heart attack in the next 6 months.
You should go for a walk once in a while.
I do every once in a while, but it's like 100 degrees today.
That's when you get out there.
No. Walk. No.
Sweat those toxins out of your body.
Because you know my dog upstairs, Hank.
Love Hank.
Hank doesn't like to go for a walk on days like this.
Well, that's because Hank is larger than me and has more hair than I have on my back. And that's a lot.
And if you don't believe that Hank is larger than Dr. Rob, well, he's not as heavy. But if he were to lay on Dr. Rob, you'd be like, they're the same size.
Travis actually doesn't have a dog. He's got a polar bear.
that's a good way to put
kind
it.
Kind of a thick one at that.
The Husker Doc Talk Podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy. Now, the annual event benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation. It's named after former Husker great Dave Remington, also friend of the show, and, well, he makes it all possible. Make plans to attend this year's celebration, or actually should say next year's celebration, at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln on January 12th, 2019. Good news, cocktails at 6:30, dinner at 7:00. 7:30, you'll have the Remington Trophy Award winner, the Ford Legends Award winner, all sorts of good stuff, and NFL stars all over the place. Take a look at this season's Remington Trophy watch list by going to the website, remingtontrophy.com. Of course, there are many different ways to find the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. The majority of you find it weekly on huskermax.com. David Max and his team run the premier Husker fan site and distribute the podcast and tons of content on a daily basis. HuskerMax.com. You can also find the podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Now, it would not be a Husker Doc Talk podcast if we were not drinking beer. I got this email from Michael earlier in the week. I was back in Nebraska over the 4th of July holiday visiting my nephew and mentioned to my sister we should go to Infusion Brewing because I heard about it on the Husker Doc Talk podcast.
I know.
See, this is the power of podcasting. They had not been yet, so we went to the Benson location and sampled everything. I can't remember what my favorite was, but there was not a bad beer at all.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Well, if I sampled everything, not only would I not remember my favorite, I don't think I'd remember the last three I drank.
That's a very good point. Oh, my God, I just took a drink of tonight's.
That's got some punch.
It's got some punch. Tonight we're drinking the Mango Habanero Wit. It's a 5% alcohol by volume, got a 22 IBU. The best way to put it is this is a great summer beer, Rob. Don't you think?
With fire.
Yeah,
the habanero is strong. Now, I don't mean that in the sense of it's going to burn your mouth off, but if you want a beer that's got some kick to it, this is a great one. You know, there's a number of beers out there. I know a lot of people do a jalapeno beer.
Yeah.
This is a great beer. I don't know if I've had a habanero before.
Yeah.
The jalapeno beers I'm kind of a fan of. I really like those. There's a good one in town that I really like. I don't want to say since we're talking about Infusion, but if you like Indian food, go find that one. This is a great beer. I'm not picking up a lot of the mango, though.
Well, you know, I think the mango...
It's there, but there ain't much.
Here's where the mango is. This is where my sophisticated beer palate is coming into play. I believe the mango is on the front end of the lips and the tongue, and the habanero is on the back end, and you kind of feel that burn going down the throat. How about that for taste testing?
Did you just grow a vagina?
I did.
It's a great
beer. It's a loose one, too.
I don't know if I needed to hear that, but you know what? It's a great beer. Yeah, it's the mango's there, but it's not overpowering. I mean, it's not like
It's not, well, it's not like a real hoppy IPA or anything like
no,
that.
It's, I mean, not. It's a whip. Oh, I just had a complete mind blank. What do you call it when you mix beer with fruit juice? I just...
I don't know.
Oh, come on. There's
a fruity beer
for it. I don't know. Almost like a Radler.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Something like
that. Like a Shandy.
Shandy.
Okay.
There we go. Thank you. Okay. God, I've had a lot of blows to the head. You
the hear, CTE, it's there. It's real.
It's in there somewhere. But you hear like a mango habanero wit, and all of a sudden you're thinking, okay, it's going to be a spicy Shandy is what this is going to be. And it's not.
It's not. Not at all. Yeah, you don't get the citrus part of it, of the mango. Again, when you take your next drink, just pay attention to the mango on the front end and the habanero on the back end. So you do have two locations for Infusion Brewing. You heard Michael mention the Benson location. Or you can go to the brewery operation and tap room in West Omaha. For more information, just go to infusionbrewing.com. Husker Hounds is your one-stop shop for everything Big Red. Three locations in the Omaha area. I got an email from Scott earlier this week, and he is fired up. He's fired up because he's making a lot of money. But because
he's excited. That guy is excited.
Is there anywhere else to get Husker gear? I don't think so. And the store I go to the most is the one on 84th, just off of Center. That's like a superstore,
and
man.
That's the one I shop at. Although I only live like 2 minutes from
that's
there.
That's true. So. I can tell you this: we'll keep you posted. But we're going to be recording live from Husker Hounds sometime, maybe before the season or right after the season. Scott keeps asking, "Can I be on the show?" Yes, you can be on the show. Can I be on the show? Yes, you can be on the show.
We had so many comments after because we had Scott on.
Right after Scott Frost was fired. Yeah, or fired. Not fired.
God, he's gone
there.
Already.
Yeah, so no, right after Scott was hired.
Holy crap, Scott. Scott Strunk. I don't think I've seen a happier human being in my life. That was one of the more entertaining podcasts we did.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Now that you have your Husker gear, because you've gone to Husker Hounds, you need to get into the game. And that's where Ticket Express comes into play. Ticket Express has your tickets, your club seats, your Champion Club passes, and parking passes. Don't wait until it's too late. Get the tickets to the games you want to go to right now by going to TicketExpress.com. Chad to take care of you. Jessica's over there. They do a great job. And I tell you what, they haven't been in business for as long as they have if they haven't done it the right way. And that's why we have found when we need to get into an event that's very hard to get into, or you're like, oh my God, I need to go to the game. How do I get tickets? You always go to Ticket Express and TicketExpress.com. Well, we're coming up on our first full week of practice. We're recording this on Thursday night, August 9th. So the Huskers will have pretty much their first week into the books, Rob. I'm going to ask you something that seems to stick out to me. And maybe it's because I'm not intimately involved the way I was back when I was on Channel 3 and covering it on a daily in-and-out basis. But is the media access to players, coaches, and practices, is it a lot less than it used to be?
It seems like there's less access. And we were talking about this. It sounds like this staff and the administration, it's very media friendly. It's not antagonistic to the media. I mean, you looked at sometimes with Pelini, it was just outright antagonistic.
Yeah.
It was sort of a, hey, we're closing all practices. Screw you. Kiss my ass. If you don't like it, I don't care. And these guys are, no, we want you guys here. We love you guys.
We're just not going to talk to you.
We're just not going to give you any access for a couple of days here.
Again, and excuse me if you're going to say, Travis, don't you know this? And I'm going to be honest, you don't, because I do have I work a job during the night and then or during the day, and then I do other things. So I'm not around it as intimate. But if I go back to, even when I started in 1994 at KPTM, all the way up through when I left when Bo Pelini was there, it was still you'd get a practice report every day from the sports information directors. Every other day, the head coach would be available. On those off days, an assistant coach would be available. We could usually go to practice for the first 5 to 10 minutes to shoot video. Now what you're seeing is Husker.com putting out video because Nebraska can control that content internally.
And I think that has a lot to do with it. They're going to put out there what they want going out there.
Well, and let's be honest now, because there's going to be a lot of noise around the program, and it's positive noise.
Then there has been.
Yes. So is it better for Scott Frost to say, hey, I need to ratchet this down a bit, because they can't lose focus of what's trying to be accomplished. And listen, I'm a media guy. I'm for as much access as possible. But I'm looking at it from Scott's perspective saying, listen, I don't want this whole fall camp to be focused on me. I need to coach these guys up. There's a lot of work to do before the season goes. And when it hasn't changed that much since you played. It really hasn't.
In terms
of,
you mean?
Of attention to the program. I mean, there was a huge amount of attention. It's probably
more. I'll
give
you that, but here's, I think, where maybe some of the difference is. And maybe
24/7.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, I think there might be sort of a relative difference here in the sense that people want to. I go to Twitter at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I want to hop back on Twitter at 10 o'clock at night and get different info.
Yeah.
I want to get new info. And you don't have that. You go back to 1994, you could read the Daily Nebraskan at 8 in the morning.
And then watch the news at 5, 6, and 10.
Yeah, and then you could read the World Herald or the Journal Star at 5 p.m., and that was it.
Okay, let me rephrase the question, because you're exactly right, and for some reason I had a brain fart and totally forgot about social media, blogs, and the internet.
And that's the thing that I think kind of clouds it a little bit, because you want that constant. It's almost daily. I want to look at something at 10, and then I want to look, whatever I see at 10 o'clock at night, I want to hop back on whatever social media platform you like to use. And I want more and new and different content at 8 o'clock the next morning.
Okay, so let me rephrase the question.
And I don't know if that's possible.
Let me rephrase the question. In the fact that it hasn't changed, in the fact that you went to practice and then had to be available for the media afterwards to talk. Was that a distraction when you're like, hey, Rob, they wanted to talk to you?
I don't think it was, but we didn't have there was always the press conference day, whatever that was.
That was Tuesdays.
Monday or Tuesday.
Tuesdays in the End Club Lounge in the South Stadium.
It is. I don't even know that.
It doesn't exist anymore, does it?
Computer lab now or something for the computer science department. Anyway, you had press conference day, and if you got tabbed to go talk to the media those days, it was usually a situation where it kind of frosted your hide, because it meant it was going to chew up about a half an hour of weightlifting time that you wanted. And then there was maybe a couple of evenings a week after practice they'd want to chat with you. But other than that, it was mostly, I think, the coaches. And then after the games, that's when you had a ton of access to the players. It was always immediately following games. And I think that's when a lot of the media really had a chance to sit down and talk with individual players. If anybody wanted to do a really specific story, like, hey, let's talk about the offensive guard position. Let's call up Joel Wilkes and Brendan Stye, and we're going to talk to these guys and kind of figure out what's making the guards click this year. Then somebody would seek you out or seek those individual players out kind of specifically for a very specific story. But otherwise, you know, most of the time that we were tabbed to talk to the media, it was press conference day and then after the games. And so I don't recall it being that much of a distraction. I think it probably was far more for the coaches. I think those were the guys who kind of maybe shield us a little bit. And I think the media really wanted to talk to the coaches.
But did you like talking to the media? I mean,
I did. Shit, I never shut up. So.
Yeah, well, that's true. You don't shut up.
Yeah.
But that's a good thing.
Yeah, sometimes. I enjoyed it, and I had a good, with the guys that were covering Nebraska at the time, had a good relationship with them.
And everybody had a different personality. And, I mean, we always wanted Christian Peter up there because you never knew what he was going to say. You were very cerebral and thoughtful. And
you weren't going to get super entertaining quotes out of it.
No, you're a lot more entertaining now in the podcast than you ever were sitting at the press conference.
Drinking beer.
But do you know who I remember the most? Believe it or not, hey, you've seen the Seinfeld episode of the different types of talkers. You've got the close talker. You got the loud talker. Troy Dumas was a soft talker. You remember Troy Dumas?
Troy
would sit on the desk, and he would talk like this, and he would give really thoughtful answers, and he was super thoughtful.
I love Troy. He's
but
a great
you couldn't
guy.
Hear a word that he said. I'm like, speak up.
I think I actually heard Troy talk maybe three times in a 4-year span. He was just a really quiet guy.
But you know what he was? He was an MF-er on the field, dude.
Oh, God, the guy was a hell of a linebacker.
He was. But yeah, that's what I remember. And I, you know, obviously the demands have changed, the 24/7 news cycle, the internet, and I get that. But at the end of the day, your typical times of talking to the media haven't changed. It was either after practice or at the press conference. And I just didn't know, especially during practice when they called you, if it was a bigger pain. You knew it was going to happen on a Tuesday, and you knew it was going to happen after a game if you had a good one. I just didn't know if, like, hey, after practice, they want you.
It seemed like it was pretty sporadic. So, yeah, it wasn't much of a distraction. And now, like I was saying before, I don't know if they really wanted to sit and talk to a bunch of old linemen. But
yeah, but the pipeline, man. It was the pipeline.
It did, but it was kind of born that year. So it wasn't until you got a few games into the season that all of a sudden everybody started kind of promoting that and talking about it. And then I think the offensive line, we played UCLA in Lincoln. I think it was third game of the season. It was our first home game. And we rushed for over 400 yards against a very good UCLA team. The offensive line got named. Whoever covered ABC, ESPN, whoever was covering the game, was one of our few televised games. That's back when not every game was televised. And we were the offensive line got named the ABC Players of the Game. And all of a sudden, that's when all that kind of started putting a bit of a spotlight on the pipeline that year.
I don't know if you're listening on Podbean or not, but if you aren't, you can go to huskerdoctalk.podbean.com. And on the podcast itself, you can actually leave comments on Facebook. And last week, we got a lot of good comments, Rob. Bill says, Dr. Rob is really fun to listen to once you get past the king-sized ego.
Damn.
I especially love it when he gets down on the slackers and flashes back to his playing days. So he loves you, but he thinks you've got a king-sized ego.
Telling people I've got a God complex.
Well, which is funny is because I'm going to be honest. I know a lot of former Huskers just because of my days of covering them. Rob does not have an ego.
If I've got an ego, it's only in the sense that I truly think we were pretty damn good back then.
Yes, but your ego is not one that you like. If you see, Rob's the only guy I know that if you go, hey, did you play for the Huskers? He'll like sit down and talk for like 3 hours with you. And his wife's going, hey, we got to move along here. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think so. I didn't think I had that big of an ego.
Jerry says, Husker fans, if you've not listened to the Husker Doc Talk podcast, do yourself a favor. Start listening. They are tops in information and fun. Listen, Jerry, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. We're probably not tops in information. All right.
You know, once the season gets going, yeah. I'd like to think we do a pretty damn good job.
Yeah, but I would say leading up, we're probably a lot more in fun. I know we're the funnest podcast. Is funnest? Yeah, not funner, funnest.
More better?
We are the funnest podcast out there because nobody drinks like we do. Nobody swears like we do. And, well, Rob and I just have really good chemistry together. Alex says, I enjoy this pairing. That would be me and you, and everything about the podcast or the beer info and drinking to the great knowledge about sports and the subjects discussed. But I have a bone to pick, and it is this. I do not like how Doc often interrupts Travis. Come on, Doc. The number down. Other than that, keep up the great work. Remember when it used to be I used to cut you off?
God, no shit.
I never thought I would ever hear somebody say that you're cutting me off. Here's the deal. I'm the facilitator here. Doc's the expert, all right? So he can cut me off whenever he wants to cut me off. Let's get back to talking about this year's team. Let's just focus on two positions this week. Let's focus on quarterback. Let's focus on running back. Let's start with quarterback. Right now, it's been said that Andrew Bunch, Tristan Jebbia and Adrian Martinez are close.
They're in a three-way tie.
Do you believe that?
No.
Neither do I.
I don't think you want to upset any one of those guys. So at least within the media, I think they're going to give everybody a little bit of fair play. I thought they did announce that it was kind of a done deal that Noah Vedral was going to be redshirted. I don't know how I feel about that. I was kind of interested to see him play, but he's a kid that I think maybe just from a little bit of a physical development standpoint, There's a little bit of seasoning they think might need a little bit more time. Jebby has been on campus for, what, year and a half now at this point? And he's a guy that I never really thought would be, I think, the go-to guy. I thought it would always be Martinez. Now, that being said, he's also a guy that I remember last year they kind of consistently talked about, hey, this guy's really good. If he could maybe gain 11 pounds of body weight, just he's kind of a stick figure running around out there. But they said he was probably one of the most mobile quarterbacks on the team last year. And he constantly got high praise. I mean, there's a lot of people said that he had just as good an arm, if not better an arm, than Tanner Lee, and was infinitely more mobile than Lee was. So maybe he's the guy who's going to actually, maybe he fits into this offense well enough that you make him the starter and you give Martinez a year to develop. I don't know what you gain by that, because it's not like Jebby is a fifth-year senior who's going to be gone after this.
And that's what I was going to ask you. Do you go with the guy? And let's say you're right there. Let's say Jebby is just a little bit ahead, right? So do you go with the guy who gives you the best chance to win now, or do you go with the guy who, over the long run, gives you the better chance to win?
That's a good question, because I look at what I call right now the Alabama paradox, where you've got Jalen Hurt, and I can't say his first
Tua,
name. Tua. We're just going to call him Tua.
Tagliavola or something like that.
I think he actually nailed it. We're going to call it T-Square.
You're lucky I don't have another drink. I'm like, Tua Tagliavola. Maybe I should say it drunk.
I was going to say, I think you nail it.
It's
when you're
Tua Tagliavola.
Got a couple of beers in you. We're going to call him T-Squared. So you got a guy that's been on campus. I mean, I guess he's a year behind Hurts, but you got Hurts who's been playing all year long. I'm referring back to last season. So Jalen Hurts is the starter all last year, starts the first half of the national title game, and then finally in the third quarter of the national title game, they put Tua in.
Tua Tagovailoa!
And he lights it up. And now you're sitting there going, well, why didn't this guy play? How come we didn't see this guy all season long?
But here's what's stupid about that, is that it was either CBS Sports or ESPN or SI.com just put out a list of the 50 best players in college football right now. Tua Tagovailoa was number 11.
Well, it's kind of a stretch based on two quarters of football.
I would agree with you. I'm like, how do you make
now
that assumption?
Now it's about as big a pressure cooker that you could put a kid in.
Well, I mean, sure.
But maybe this is a guy that maybe he wasn't. Maybe he's the best guy and gives you the best chance going forward. But maybe he needed the better part of a season to get to that point. Maybe Tua is Nebraska's Adrian Martinez.
So you're saying
Jalen Hurts is Jebby? That, you know what?
Okay, that's a
yeah. Let's we're gonna have Jebby be the starter because he's a little bit ahead of the curve right now, and he's the guy who's gonna give us the best chance to win right now. We'll keep working with Martinez. We're gonna keep teaching him. We're gonna keep bringing him along. He's gonna keep developing. And you know what? Maybe mid-season, maybe by the time you're pushing towards a bowl game, knock on wood, Nebraska gets there, he'll be the guy at that point, but maybe not now. Look at Tommy Frazier's freshman year. Mike Grant started that year. Tommy Frazier was a true freshman. Osborne very specifically had kind of this really calculated plan where I think we all thought that, see, here's the thing. I want to go down on campus, and I want to very anonymously ask all the guys on offense, the running backs, the wide receivers, the O linemen, I want to ask them who ought to be starting. Because if you asked us who was the best quarterback at the start of the 92 season, I think most all of us would have said, God, this freaking true freshman, this kid is the man. I mean, the guy just commands the huddle, huge amount of confidence, and the kid can just flat out play ball. Not that I don't like Mike Grant. Mike's a good guy. But Tommy was infinitely better. But I think Osborne wanted Tommy to have a little bit of development. Let's wait till the conference season starts. We lost a game in the non-conference season because Tommy wasn't playing. I think we go up to Washington, and I think we beat Washington in Seattle if Tommy's the quarterback. But I think Osborne wanted to make sure the kid had kind of gotten a little development, gotten a little bit of seasoning, and got used to playing at that level before he did that.
Well, that's a good point, because and the 92 team is a little different than this team, because this team could struggle at times this year, right? I think we can both agree there's the potential of struggling. So do you want
to agree? We were in – I mean, I think we could have won – we had three losses in 92. We could have won any of those three games. It wasn't like we were completely out of them.
So are you better to ease him in there, like you say, because if he's not ready, if you are taken over by the bright lights and 92,000 people or whatever.
I think you can mentally break a kid by throwing him out there too quick. I really do. And I kind of wonder. And I don't think that would have happened to a guy like Frazier, but I think Osborne wanted to make damn sure it didn't happen. And I think Osborne wanted to wait till the conference season started with the notion that, you know, once we get to the conference season, if we win the conference, we're going to the Orange Bowl and we've at least got a shot at bigger and better things. And so I think Osborne kind of used that four-game non-conference season as a time to just, you know, let's just kind of bring him along slowly, make sure he's got a feel for things. Let's not get him overwhelmed right off the bat. And then once the conference season starts, let's see what he can do. And I think in overall, I don't think it was a bad move. I really still wish we had Tommy starting when we went up to Seattle. But
did anybody have the guts to go to Osborne and say, "Listen, we like Mike, but he should not be the quarterback"?
I don't know if it was a guts thing. I think we just had a lot of faith in Osborne as a decision maker. And we just kind of figured, well, maybe crap, he's seeing something that we aren't. And I don't think it was a bad move. I don't think it was a bad philosophy by Osborne to do that. It never would have flown in this day and age. You fast forward to 2018, you've got a true freshman who you're sitting there going, okay, this guy is definitely going to be the starter. He's starting from day one. That's just the way it works today. And I think the kids expect it.
Yeah.
I think Tommy would have been fine being thrown in there from the get-go. My thoughts. But, I don't think it's a bad move to be able to say, hey, we're going to – if Jebby is just a little bit ahead, you go ahead and start him, even though you may know that – and like I said, I'm saying hypothetically – Let's say that Jebby is a little bit ahead on opening day, but Martinez is definitely going to be your quarterback of the future. I don't think there's a problem with starting off with Jebby until you confidently feel that Martinez has passed him.
Do you think Mike Grant knew that he was going to not be the starter by the end of that season? And that leads in.
That's a good question. I don't think so. I think any good quarterback truly feels this is my job.
Okay.
And it's my job. I'm going to continue to get better. I'm going to continue to develop, and I'm going to perform to the best of my abilities. And if you don't have that, it's well, then you shouldn't be the quarterback in the first place. Well,
that's a good point, but it leads into Jebby, even if he was a starter, he's got to know that, A, the fans want Martinez. There's this huge expectation of Martinez that eventually he's probably going to lose that job, right? Or somebody leaves.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
No, I agree. And, you know, I wouldn't deny the fact that there was maybe in the back of Mike Grant's head at some point, he had a little bit of that. God, this kid's pretty freaking good. Yeah. It's going to be tough for me to hold on to this.
All right, so we move from the quarterbacks. Let's now shift to the running backs for this week. So we'll focus on the quarterbacks and running backs. And Maurice Washington is now practicing. He's eligible. Now, here's a guy that didn't work out all summer with these guys. He wasn't eligible, so he wasn't in summer workouts. But I think
I'm pretty sure. Word on the street is if you see him in person, he's been working out.
Yeah, but what I'm talking about, just going through those workouts, all those non-mandatory practices where you run plays,
7-on-7. Yay.
Yeah, but I mean, they say he's impressing already.
Yeah, this might be, in my opinion, the most improved from a personnel standpoint, from just a across-the-board talent standpoint. This might be the most improved group on the team. And I say that because with Maurice Washington, you got Greg Bell, you got some of these guys who I think are expected to be some kind of high potential playmakers just right out of the gate. The guy that I thought was the best running back on the team last year is Trey Bryant. And they're saying he looks as healthy as he's looked in a year. And so I think that's going to help a heck of a lot. So I think there's going to be a big jump up. You know, I kind of feel bad because the guy that I really rooted for the whole time under Mike Riley was Divine Ozigbo. And I think this is a guy who might end up, I mean, geez, he could potentially end up being fourth string.
Now, he was, I think, in the paper the other day saying he's anxious to show his stuff in the new offense and show what he can do with a new coach.
Yeah.
How about Wilbon?
Is he still on the team?
Yeah, that's it. Is he?
Hell, I don't know.
Well, I'm just looking at the roster right now, and I should know this. He's on the roster.
Whatever. Okay, this is sad because I don't know. I thought Wilbon was gone.
And he might. They may not have taken him off the yeah. And I should know this, but I don't. So I'm freely saying.
Nice.
I just kind of ruined the podcast. I just sucked the air out of the podcast.
That's the thing. But, well, here's the thing. That's how much hype and discussion and talk that you're hearing from guys like Bryant and Washington and Bell. Nobody's paying attention to any of the other guys. And I kind of feel bad for a guy like Ozigbo because I think he could end up being a complete also-ran this season.
How about Jalen Bradley? No? I mean, these are guys who you thought were going to, under Mike Riley.
Well, you know, I think Bradley was a kid. I think he's got a lot of, people have high hopes for him because he's a local kid. Yeah. He's an Omaha kid. Or Bellevue kid, at least.
It's all the same, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but Bradley's a kid that, I don't know. I think he was as good as what we had in the state of Nebraska at that time. But it's not like this was back in the days of Leotis Flowers, Keith Jones, Calvin Jones, Clinton Childs, Damon Benning, Amon Green, when Omaha was just churning out NFL-caliber guys left and right. It's not like you're going to look at Jalen Bradley 10 years from now like you do. I mean, people still sit around and talk about Omaha Central in terms of, God, you remember when Central had Abe Hoskins and Calvin Jones and few years later, Amon Green came along, and before that, you had Leotis and Keith Jones, and it's not like you're looking at Omaha running backs now in that light.
Are you looking at any Nebraska high school football player in that light anymore? Think about it.
Well, I mean, you got guys pop up time to time. You got a guy like Danny Woodhead. You got who's at Moses Bryan out of Elkhorn, but I don't think it's that caliber. But, I mean, there's kind of an ebb and flow. You kind of have it seems like you have a run of players that are really good for a while, and then you don't, and then they're kind of back again. I mean, you had years where you had players. I mean, you had a guy like a Baker Steinkuhler coming out of Nebraska. You go to the year when those years when Millard North was churning out Hawkeye players every other year with Seth Olson and Shada and all of those kids that came out of Millard North. Of course, they all went to frickin' Iowa. But yeah, screw you. Hey, but so, I mean, but, there's always an ebb and flow of talent in the state, and I think that's just a product of the population base. It's not much. I'm just saying, let's get back to the running backs. I'm just saying it's not like you look at Jalen Bradley and go, oh, my God, this kid's going to be another Amon Green, let alone a Clinton Childs or Damon Benning, who are a true NFL-caliber guys.
Damon wasn't an NFL-caliber guy.
He stuck around for a couple seasons.
And that's not a knock. I'm just saying of those.
The guy made it to the NFL.
Okay.
He's got an Orange Bowl MVP trophy.
He does have that.
You got an Orange Bowl MVP trophy?
No, but I was at that Orange Bowl. Remember that Orange Bowl like it was yesterday.
There you have it. All I'm saying is that just would you look? Okay, hold on. Let me put it this way. Would you put Jalen Bradley, would you say he's as good as Damon Benning and Clinton Childs?
No. No.
Okay, those guys were fourth string running backs at Nebraska at that time. That's how good we had it then. And those guys were outstanding football players. I don't think anybody ever hit as hard as Clinton Childs. Those guys were incredible, incredible.
That came from Clinton's wrestling days. I mean, that
came from Clinton's heart and Clinton's head. Yeah. And if you knew the guy had a huge heart.
So,
well, he was a hell of an athlete. I'm just saying.
We've digressed here.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I appreciate Jalen Bradley. He's no Clinton Childs. He's no Damon Benning. And I don't see him really having an impact on the field as a running back at Nebraska. I really don't. God, I hate saying this. It's almost like it was a sympathy move that they gave him a scholarship. This is a kid who's going to be third, fourth, fifth string most of his career down in Lincoln.
So the Husker fans have an idea of what they want their running back to be like. I believe that. I think they have an idea. What will the running back be like in this offense? It's not going to be a...
That's a good question. I think Frost has a little bit more to work. If there's one position that Frost might have a little more to work with than what he had at Central Florida, I think it's the running back spot. But I think it's going to be somebody who's got to be a jack of all trades.
That's what I mean, because and I didn't mean to cut you off. But what I mean is how that running back is used. People still remember.
This ain't going to be tailback you.
Yes, and that's what I was getting at. Husker fans have their idea of what their running back is, but I think the running back position in this offense, it does not fit what the memory serves.
You know, I agree with that, but I don't think people are really going to typecast Frost into being the next Tom Osborne in terms of how Tom Osborne ran an offense. But you got to remember, and we've talked about this before, Osborne changed things up a lot. Okay, he was a pro-style passing guy, 60s, 1970s. It wasn't like we talked about before. It wasn't until Turner Gill got there that Osborne decided, hey, maybe I should try this option thing out. Maybe I should do a little power option. Have a power running game. That didn't come along for Osborne until the early 80s. And then when he had guys like Brooke Behringer and Frazier to play with, it turned into sort of this weird forerunner, the spread option.
But they still fit that mold, though.
The running backs always did.
Yeah.
It was always a classic running back. I will give you that. I think Frost's – either way, my point is Frost's offense is going to be a hell of a lot different than what Osborne ran. And I think it's going to be multifaceted. I don't think you're going to see a real definitive style. But I think as a running back, you're going to be somebody who's got to – if you're a running back in Frost's offense – I would be willing to bet the two biggest attributes, the two things you better be able to do, catch the ball and block.
And run like hell. You better be fast.
Yeah. And I think if you can catch the ball and if you can block, you're gonna have a hell of a time in this offense. Hell of a good time.
What'd you think of the new uniforms? Did you see the video of the new uniforms?
Number one, it looked like a couple of 13-year-old kids modeling them.
But there's no seams. It's like
I kept waiting for Jerry Sandusky to come out from behind the camera.
Dude, that's too soon.
It was not.
Too soon.
It kind of weirded me out. I'm serious.
So it's this new Adidas, like, no seam stuff. And they got rid of the stripe on the pants. So we're going back to solid pants.
Bugging the hell out of me.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like them.
Helmet didn't change, though.
Thank God.
Do you think that changes under Frost? Do you think he starts pushing the limits?
Oh.
I mean, look where, I mean, he.
If it helps Nebraska win, it wouldn't surprise me if he did. Well, I mean, they've done different helmets for the. They've done.
But I'm talking on a more regular basis to where you're rotating uniforms every game.
I don't think they're going to go to that.
Okay.
But it wouldn't surprise me if he did something where maybe the jersey and pants or they kind of do a change up.
Just no all whites, right?
God, I hope they don't go all white. Worst freaking uniform ever.
Last week when we recorded, the Urban Meyer stuff, it just broke. Now we're in like this, in day six of a 14-day waiting period to where they say they're going to have a determination on what has happened and what the punishment will be. We do know that Urban Meyer lied.
I thought he was going to be fired by now.
I don't think he's going to get fired.
I don't think he is either.
Well, hold on. I think he's going to get fired if what he said was, because he came back and said, I lied to the media. By the way, lying to the media is not a fireable offense. Makes you look real stupid because now you got egg on your face. But he came back and said, I knew about it and I reported it. And if that's the case, if it's true, he'll keep his job. He might get suspended for a game for looking stupid.
But what is the offense that you're suspending him for? Not firing this guy?
No, well, because
when you reported it and it went up the chain of command and the chain of command said you don't have to fire him
because
and you don't fire him, what are you suspending him for?
But their fallback is this. Their fallback is he was never charged. You can suspend him for flat out lying to the media. You can say, hey, you're going to sit out the first game. First game, I believe, is
big. Who cares if it's one game?
I get
game.
That, but some people would be like, well, at least they suspended him for one game. If he did tell Gene Smith, if he did tell the administration that he and reported it, he won't be fired.
What's going to happen? Somebody in admin, Gene Smith, or somebody else is going to get canned.
God, Gene Smith is one of the most powerful athletic directors in the country. It'd be hard to fire that guy for a number of different reasons, but.
It would be that said, the whole landscape has changed in terms of how we view things.
I would agree.
It really has. God, if this was like the 1980s, this story would have been dead weeks ago.
You're right.
Now, I had a chance. I don't think I'm not going off. This was, had a casual conversation, ran into Eric Olson. I see Eric pretty
regularly. Eric Olson, by the way, former Omaha World Herald reporter, now writes for the Associated Press.
Correct. Great guy. Love Eric. He and I were just kind of chewing the fat over this. And Eric said the thing that still just kind of shocks him about the whole Urban Meyer thing, why did Urban seem so damn caught off guard at Media Day?
That's what's stupid.
And everybody's discussed that. Eric made the point that because he fired Zach Smith. What was it, like 1 or 2 days before that?
Like 2 days.
Yeah, it was pretty soon before that. You don't think you're going to get asked about that? Eric's comment was he goes, when I covered Nebraska directly, that's the kind of thing a sports information director would have you prepped. Five ways from Sunday on how to answer questions.
What's amazing is he started his press conference by saying, as you know, we had some personnel changes over the last couple of days. I'll answer a couple questions about that, then we'll move on. So he even invited the questions, which was, okay, if you invited the question.
But I think it's kind of an underhanded invite that almost sounds like, let's brush this under the rug as fast as we freaking can, with the way he said that. That wasn't a, let's discuss this. That was a, I know no matter what, there's going to be some questions coming, but let's get past those as fast as we can and get on to talking about who's going to start at quarterback this year.
So by the next time we record, Urban Meyer may or may not have a job. So we'll know in next week when we record. Time now for a listener email. And by the way, if you ever want to ask Dr. Rob a question, all you have to do is log on to your email account and send an email to doctalksports@gmail.com. That's doctalksports, D-O-C-T-A-L-K, sports@gmail.com. Michael in Colorado writes, well, it's not really a question. He just wants to rant a little bit. Regarding the upcoming season, I see 6-6 is a good season. We have a challenging schedule, and as Rob pointed out, we're lacking talent in some key areas. Many Husker fans I've talked to are mostly aligned with me on this. What will be the true indicator of success, in my opinion, is the level of effort from the team. Even if we are down by 3 touchdowns, the team still needs to play hard. Too many times in the past decade or more, the team has just given up. So I think he's asking you, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I really do. Guessing the record is so damn hard in a transitional year like this. It really is. And as many changes, positive changes that have come about, it's still really hard to guess what the record's going to be. You could have a Bo Pelini year one and punch out 9 wins. It could be Mike Riley year one and
suck.
Yeah, it just wasn't pretty. Well, God, they actually made it to a bowl game. What was it? I think they were, 5-6 or 5-7 yeah, going into the bowl game. Got a bowl game win to finish 6-7. Trounced UCLA, though. That's always
fun. Yeah. Probably his best moment at Nebraska.
I would agree. It really was. That was probably the best game he coached. They, 7-5. I'd be really happy with 7-5. 8-4, I'd be euphoric. I don't know what I'd do with myself if Nebraska went 8-4, but I think 6-7 wins would be a really solid year. And I say that based kind of like you said in the email, it's lacking a key spots talent wise, and you got a couple of. It's a transition year. It's just they are tough. It's hard to win.
I think they're going to be better than most people think, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut because I made predictions last year and I was dead wrong. So I'm just going to follow along and enjoy it as it goes.
You and I were both wrong. The sign of success in my mind is kind of what we just read. Nebraska going out and still throwing punches late into the fourth quarter. That's what I want to see. You're getting beat, but you're still doing everything you can to try and win the damn game.
Rodney writes in, gentlemen, I enjoy your podcast, and I listen to everyone. Boy, that's a lot of listening. I especially like the fact that Remington asked you guys to tamp down the potty mouths. Come on. We like to cuss. We like to swear. Swearing's fun. And we like not to be politically correct. My question is based on the performance of the UCF defense against Michigan in 2016, where they gave up 51 points. However, that can be explained in part because of 4 tip punts, kicks on special teams, and the UCF offense having trouble moving the ball. Although they gave up 51 points, the UCF defense never gave up, and they were just giving as much effort on the last play of the game as the first, as they did out-hit Michigan. So, do you think the Husker fan base will be okay with Nebraska giving up 40-plus points if they can see effort and intensity on every last play?
I think if you see that, it makes a big difference because I think that's something we haven't seen. They got beat pretty badly in that Michigan game. Again, it was a transitional year.
That was year number one, too.
That was a transitional year for Central Florida. If you watch that game, they actually hung in there pretty good the first 2 quarters. I mean, they really went toe-to-toe with Michigan for about 2 quarters. And then, again, like you said, there were some tipped balls that kind of didn't bounce Central Florida's way. And things kind of – they ended up getting steamrolled, but it wasn't this physically dominating win that you would have thought it was. If you go back and watch that game, they got beat, but Michigan had help by, like I said, there were some key turnovers that really killed Central Florida, but the effort was there, and I think the game was there the first couple of quarters.
All right, Rodney, good question. So if you want to hear more from Dr. Rob throughout the week, you heard him say he gets on Twitter. Well, guess what? He does get on Twitter, and you can follow him on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. If you want to email Dr. Rob questions, all you have to do is do that at doctalksports@gmail.com. I want to thank Dave Remington and the Remington Trophy for being the presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. He brings it to you every single season, and we're happy to do it for you because, well, we like to get together and drink Infusion Brewing Company beer. Also, thanks to Ticket Express and HuskerHounds.com, and another thank you to HuskerMax.com for distributing the podcast. You can also find it on Podbean, Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher. Dr. Rob, I got to move my kid to college sometime next week, so I don't know when we'll record. We may do it on a Friday or Saturday. I don't know if you got time.
We will figure it out.
We'll figure it out. For Dr. Rob Zadis, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next time on the Husker Doc Talk Podcast.